What you're about to experience is a mock-up of the exhibition, which will eventually be articulated in the Amica platform as a PowerPoint. And Amica is a narrative online platform where the user can create their own narratives through combining different options within it. So you follow your own thread. And those of you who have ever used any of the Trinity College Dublin exhibitions will be familiar with this type of platform. It also will double as offering you some program notes for the concert you will hear shortly. This will feature the mezzo-soprano's Martha O'Brien, the mezzo-soprano Helen Aiken, pianist Aoife O'Sullivan, and also Dr. Connor Caldwell, although he will provide his own narrative shortly. So, but we will not follow the order of the program is in your booklet, pages 49 to 50, but the order you're going to hear here is going to be driven by the exhibition itself. So, you will see that there are sections within, then you click on a link and you follow it, and then you get some text to the side. So Lalla Rook, as we've already been told, was an epic tale told in a mixture of prose and poetry. The title character, a Mughal princess, journeys to her betrothed's empire in Bukharia, now present-day Uzbekistan, in the company of her father's vice chamberlain and a Bukharian poet. The latter tells her four poetic tales during the journey, revealing himself as her destined spouse at its end. This story spawned dozens of songs and several substantial concert or theater works throughout the 19th century. So we're going to follow the story of Lalla Rook illustrated first. And here again you have sections. So Moore's tale inspired numerous illustrated editions throughout the 19th century, either of the whole story or a part thereof. And we have presented each of Faramortz's poetic tales as a section, while the love story of the Lalla Rook and her poet, which is the overarching prose narrative into which these poems are interpolated, is treated as its own section. We will now move to Paradise and the Peri. Again, you've got your sections. Faramortz's second tale for Lalla Rook was the Paradise and the Peri. Moore's Peri, a Persian angel, had been denied entry into the paradise due to an undisclosed sin. These illustrations trace her three missions to Earth to try to find the perfect gift that will readmit her to paradise. We also include a number of book covers and title pages that demonstrate the vogue for Oriental art during the 19th century. Let's go to the Peri denied. And here again you have sections featuring three different artistic treatments of this part of the story. And this is how Moore's poetic tale opens. One morn a Peri at the gate of Eden stood disconsolate, and as she listened to the springs of life within like music flowing, and caught the light upon her wings through the half-open portal glowing, she wept to think her recreant race should e'er have lost that glorious place. Artists have responded to the Peri's predicament differently. Owen Jones will present the moment of conflict between the angel and the Peri. And let's move to the Peri denied, Owen Jones. The glorious angel who was keeping the gates of light beheld her weeping. Nymph of a fair but erring line, one hope is thine. 'Tis written in the book of fate, the Peri yet may be forgiven who brings to this eternal gate the gift that is most dear to heaven. Let's follow the first mission. Charged with the quest that will redeem her, but obliged to identify the gift herself, the Peri descends to earth. And so in the concert, Helen Aiken will perform "But Whither Shall the Spirit" by J.F. Barnett. And that's exactly at this point in the story where she reflects, where can I go to get this gift? What would heaven want? Then the Peri recalls a region of India, crimson now her rivers ran with human blood due to the invasion of a wrathful tyrant. So the Peri resolves to seek her gift there. Now we go to the section, The Tyrant of Gazna. Moore, who was an indefatigable researcher, discovered that there was a Muhammad of Ghazna who conquered India in the 11th century. He was famed for his 400 bejeweled hounds. Lithographer Owen Jones depicts Moore's advancing tyrant. Fierce in wrath, his bloodhounds he adorns with gems torn from the violated necks of many a young and loved sultana. So that's the tyrant of Ghazna. Then we follow the link for the Peri with the fallen hero. The Peri notes a youthful warrior who falls in direct battle with the tyrant. In Moore's words, swiftly descending on a ray of morning light, she caught the last glorious drop his heart had shed before its freeborn spirit fled. And so here you can see in Owen Jones' lithograph, the Peri descending on the shaft of light. We then go back to the main menu. And we're going to follow the story of the second mission. The plague. The Peri's second quest sees her travel to Egypt, which was suffering from a severe infestation of the plague. She witnesses a touching scene between two young lovers. The young woman voluntarily catching the plague from her lover so she can join him in death. The Peri hopes a relic from that scene, the last sigh of the dying woman, will gain her entrance to paradise. Then we follow the link for the plague. Lithographer Owen Jones is unique in depicting the cause of suffering behind the Peri's second quest, rendering Moore's demon of the plague who cast from his hot wing a deadlier blast, more mortal far than ever came from the red desert's sands of flame. Then we move to the sacrifice. A young maiden has discovered her lover, hiding to spare her catching the plague. She reassures him that her place is by his side, addressing him in Moore's words, "Then turn to me, my own love, turn, before like thee I fade and burn. Cling to these yet cool lips and share the last pure life that lingers there." So we see him attempting to push his lover away. And then the moment of death is captured variously by Owen Jones, where you see a realistic collapse of the woman on top of the man and the Peri hovering above, whereas John Tenniel seems more concerned with creating a nice line in the picture. So you've got the lady implausibly lying on her back on top of her lover, so you get a nice beautiful line there, and the Peri perched right on top of them. So the Peri captures the last sigh of the woman and takes it back to Heaven's Gate. But this would not be enough. And then her reaction to this renewed disbarment was Schumann's song Verstoßen from Paradise and the Peri, which Helen Aiken will sing in the program presently. It's a very noble account of suffering. If we move back to the main menu, we can now see that there are a couple more sections, and I'm just going to summarize these briefly. The Peri's third and final mission is to another part of the Middle East, where she is at an oasis where there is a child praying, an old man watching, and a horse. The old man turns out to be a raddled sinner who, moved by the sight of the young boy praying, remembers his own youthful innocence, and he cries. The Peri captures this tear of redemption, takes it back to the gate. "Yes, that's good enough. You are welcome to enter heaven, because redemption is the greatest gift of all." And there are indeed many musical responses to this, including a cantata by John Clark Whitfield that's not part of the program today, but which will certainly feature in our project. So let's move to another level of the menu. And we see the sections of Lalla Rookh. We had the story of Lalla Rookh illustrated. Now we're going to follow the link for the songs. And the music here is divided into three categories: songs, concert music, and theater music, reflecting Nicholas Temperley's discussion of 19th century music articulate it in this manner. So you get the story again, which I won't repeat, but that is how the structure will work within the exhibition. We move to the songs, and you have two sections. And we're going to follow the particular song text. But let me read the introduction. Some 20 excerpts from Lalla Rookh were set as songs by Europe's composers during the 19th century. Some of these were actual songs within Moore's text. In other cases, the composer selected an inspiring passage of poetry to set. The story of the songs can be traced to the efforts of individual composers or by the journeys of the individual song texts. We will follow the latter today. So, we move to the link. Now here, it's partly the restrictions of the format. I couldn't list 23 songs here, so I've just listed the ones we're going to hear today and the links for them. So here we go. I've described how there were 20 excerpts originally. Here's a new piece of information to impart. Some of these texts were set by more than one composer, and some settings enjoyed a transatlantic transmission. So you can follow that a bit in the narrative of our exhibition. So the first song we're going to visit is Bendemeer's Stream. Bendemeer's Stream from The Veiled Prophet is a nostalgic lyric sung by the concubine Zelika to fulfill the prophet's demands that she seduce her former lover Etzim. This individual lyric was set by more composers than any other from Lalla Rookh. With James Power of London publishing settings by Lord Burghersh, William Hawes, and Lady Flint shortly after Moore's poem came out in 1817. A later setting by Edward Bunnett was published in 1865. American settings as Bower of Roses include J. Wilson, New York, 1817, as well as R.W. Wyatt and S. Weatherby, Boston, 1820. The song also appears in Charles Villiers Stanford's opera, The Veiled Prophet, which appeared in London as Il Profeto Veletto. So Martha today is going to sing to two versions of this, a more immediate reaction by Lady Flint and then Stanford's later setting of the same lyric. And the illustration you have there is taken from the John Tenniel. The next song we're going to follow is A Spirit There Is. Again, a Tenniel illustration here of the harem dancing gaily. A Spirit There is an ode to the pleasures of love, and it's taken from the first poetic tale, The Veiled Prophet. It is sung by a chorus of girls in the prophet's harem and is overheard by the wandering hero, Atsim. It was set twice by the Danish composer George Gershon in London in 1821, and also by Henry Theodore Ponte in London in 1879. Martha will sing the Gershon version for you today. The next song we're going to visit is Tell Me Not of Joys Above. As Lalla Rookh's bridal procession approaches Lahore, she realizes the strength of her feelings for the poet Faramortz. Fearing a loss of honor before she is wed, she banishes the poet from her retinue. After experiencing the pageants put on by the Lahorian court, she continues her journey, and she's serenaded by a familiar voice amongst the trees. Tell me not of joys above, if that world can give no bliss, truer, happier than the love which enslaves our souls in this. This song from the story was set by Danish composer and banker George Gershon and is now available in a modern edition on IMSLP. Helen will sing it to you presently. The next song we're going to explore is Her Hands Were Clasped. Within The Fire Worshippers, the Arabian princess Hinda sets forth in a bark to warn her Gaber lover of her father's plot to annihilate his tribe of native Persians. Hinda declares her true love to her god Allah, after which Moore's poem reverts to the third person. Her hands were clasped, her eyes upturned, dropping their tears like moonlight rain, continuing with lines that praised the purity of Hinda's spirit. This particular portion of Moore's poem was set as a recitative air sequence by British composer Thomas Attwood and published by James Power circa 1818. Martha O'Brien will sing that song for you today. a consideration of more repertory would not be complete without considering John Stevenson, so I'm now going to talk about a piece that sadly won't appear today. In The Fire Worshippers, Hinda sets off in her bark to warn her Gaber lover of the danger her father's army is posing. She's captured by a ship of Gaber warriors and blindfolded. Her terror turns to ecstatic relief when she hears the voice of her beloved, and Moore conveys her thoughts thus. 'Twas his own voice, she could not err. Throughout the breathing world's extent, there was one such voice for her, so kind, so soft, so eloquent. Moore's regular musical collaborator, Sir John Stevenson, set this text in a recitative air sequence that was published by James Power in London and by Blake in Philadelphia. And we have a flute and piano rendition of this. It was performed in a student pasticcio production dedicated to Lalla Rookh recently at Queen's University Belfast. The entire production will feature as a podcast on the Erin Project website in due course. Now, moving on, we're nearly towards the end here, to Araby's Daughter. The Fire Worshippers ends with the Gabers being conquered, Hinda's lover Hafid sacrificing himself in the flames of the Gaber altar, and Hinda throwing herself into the sea. Farewell to the Araby's Daughter is sung by the Peri, who returns to mourn over the corpse of the drowned Hinda. It was the most widely circulated song from Moore's Lalla Rookh, with settings by George Kalmark, appearing in London, New York, and Boston, as well as the Moravian-American composer J.G. Clem, who published it himself in Philadelphia. The tune, Araby's Daughter, also appears in O'Neill's Music of Ireland, a collection of traditional Irish tunes first published in Chicago in 1903. You will hear all three versions in today's concert. We come back to the main menu for our last exploration, which is going to be the concert music. We follow that through. From about 1840, the principal music response to Moore's Lalla Rookh changes from song to larger scale works suitable for the newly popular choral societies. These institutions, whose activities were supported by the music publishers, facilitated a widespread and repeated exposure of European citizens to music inspired by Moore's poem. This phenomenon continued in a sustained way into the early years of the 20th century. Let's follow through to the Schumann Das Paradies in D. Peri. The first and most famous choral work set to Moore's Lalla Rookh was Robert Schumann's Das Paradies in D. Peri, which premiered in Leipzig in 1843. Schumann and Flechsig's text was translated into French and English and subsequently performed in Dublin, London, Paris, and America, as well as, of course, further performances throughout Germany. Now we move to another Paradise in the Peri. Moore's Tale of the Peri was also set by Leipzig-trained British composer John Francis Barnett and premiered at the Birmingham Triennial Festival in 1870. Over the ensuing decade, the musical Times records performances of this work at Crystal Palace, also public renditions by choral societies in South Norwood, Brixton, Frith, Retford, as well as in far-off Madras. And to conclude, we have Lalla Rookh by Frederick Clay. And the engraving here is from Richard Westall's engravings of 1817. But the story is this. The true love of Lalla Rookh and her poet provided a particular attraction in the Victorian period. To Moore's tale, W.G. Wills' libretto for Frederick Clay's cantata adds a lover's duet, a declaration of devotion to the princess by Vice-Chamberlain Fadledeen, also a named field slave, Layla, who expresses her loyalty to the princess and provides atmospheric songs, including Sleep My Sultana, which you'll hear presently. Lalla Rookh is depicted as bored and unfulfilled, still this golden lulled forever, which you'll also hear. Clay's cantata premiered at the Brighton Festival in 1877. Faramortz's beguiling song, I'll Sing These Songs of Araby, was an immediate hit. Several 20th century recordings, including a couple by with featuring John McCormack may be found on YouTube. So that is part of the journey that you can take with Moore's Lalla Rookh, and I'm sure you'll agree that it had indeed some interesting travels. Thank you for your attention.